Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
Adjusting my microphone.
Hmm.
I'm good. It's bedtime, right?
Yeah, if you're in certain parts of the world.
Am I in that part of the world?
No. You have to stay up for
No.
at least another hour and a half. And then you can just pass out in your chair afterwards.
Yeah, I can do that. You're
So,
gonna sing me a lullaby and I'll fall asleep.
man, I don't think that would put anyone to sleep.
Never know. You never know.
Yeah.
Part of this movie. I may have taken a very brief nap during a motorcycle chase during this movie, but that's okay because I've seen it before, so it's all right.
No, I've seen this before as well. When I was on my trip the other week, on the flight back, I watched this, and I watched Battle Angel Alita. So those are things that I saw with my
Was this
eyes
the was
for
this the
free.
first time you had seen it on an airplane?
Yes. I should put this mildly. I was skeptical of not just the concept and character and all that stuff and Tom Hardy, etc., but just the say businessy shenanigans that went on to bring this to screen, because this is one of those situations where Sony bought the rights in like a very weird contract that lets them keep all the Spider-Man stuff as long as they got Spider-Man stuff in development. So at several points in the last couple, 15-ish years, they've had various Venom-related things in development at various stages.
And as long as they were making Spider-Man, that they were allowed to keep the Venom as well.
Yeah, they get all the stuff, all the Spider-Man related things, which includes Venom and all the Venom symbiote stuff. But an added bizarre wrinkle is that they decided to move ahead with this after they made their deal with Marvel. And so Spider-Man's not in a Spider-Man character related movie thing, and it's not mentioned, so it's very peculiar because why it's sort of a large component of this character's origin story.
Well, he's all the way over there in San Francisco in this movie, and it mostly takes place over the course of like a day, even though there's a 6 months later title card at some point. None of the real action happens.
Yeah, but it was a curious choice because they decide to retell the origin story for Venom again, which has been depicted on film once already in Spider-Man 3, the last of the Sam Raimi movies. And
Was it? I don't really remember the depiction from Spider-Man 3. I feel like he came in on a comet or something.
no, it was a ship bringing a sample back. I think it was from Mars, if memory serves, and it escapes and causes problems. And Spider-Man, Tobey Maguire gets the suit.
Oh, I remember Toby's portion of it. I just don't remember how it got there. You got the bell tower
You got the
later on with the
strutting.
thing. The strutting, you got the hair, the dancing, the jazz.
That little chair flip thing he does. But there's a So it's that one's not exactly true to what was in the comics or whatever, but
It's like
it
the
was close
mask,
enough.
but more emo.
Yeah. But what's curious is one of the things that they chose to keep at the beginning of this movie was the J. Jonah Jameson's astronaut son is bringing a sample back from outer space in his rocket
Oh
ship.
God, is that the reference why they actually had to say that's Jameson, he's
Yes,
alive.
yes,
And all I
yes.
thought was, people should start naming people Jameson. It just makes me think of the alcohol.
Oh, well, I think that says more about you than it says about and people named Jameson.
I guess, but
Yeah,
it's another one of those things where it's a last name that has become a first name, that modern trend. I think I know a couple of people who are naming children Jameson.
Oh, well, that's unfortunate for a variety of reasons, but I guess they can at some point realize that their parents made a mistake and go by James or something. But
yeah, so, well, you got to have a longer name so you can have shorter nicknames.
Yes, like Jamesy, Eason, you know, all kinds of fun stuff.
Chose to name you Joseph Rosensteel, mm-hmm. knowing that you would just go by Joe Steele.
Or if you were another actor who had portrayed Venom, you could go by Topher instead of Christopher.
Yeah, you went the other way instead of mm-hmm. the, you know, the normal way.
Yeah.
It's an artist's prerogative, I suppose.
Yeah, so, anywho, it's interesting that they chose to keep the astronaut space part sample thing, but, like, just slightly change it, because it's one of those things where it just seems like I feel like the idea for the one that the way that it happens in Spider-Man 3 is basically lifted from Species 3. Do you remember that one?
No.
Oh, there's an astronaut who comes back from outer space.
I have no idea how I would recognize the third one.
We should watch the Species movies at some point. They're bad.
I feel like there are like hundreds of movies we could watch before we got around to those.
Yeah, but something tells me those are inexpensive. But the
we pride ourselves on watching inexpensive movies.
Only the finest. But the yeah, so it's weird that they chose to take that as the stepping stone for where they were going to start from, and then because they don't have Peter Parker or Spider-Man featured, it becomes a story that you tell in isolation without that thing, because Eddie Brock and the symbiote, their hatred of Peter Parker and Spider-Man is what defines them in the comics. And then they were originally like an actual enemy, and then they turned into an anti-hero. And then when they turned into an anti-hero, they had to actually have like things that were worse than them to fight. So you got a lot of silly symbiote action happening.
Yeah, they've got Iron Man syndrome, where at some point Iron Man is going to have to fight another large robot-type thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so...
Except symbiotes, which is why I brought up earlier the timeline of the film, because you could kind of excuse the fact that maybe Spider-Man isn't in this if the movie takes place over the course of a day or two. Maybe, you know, news doesn't travel as quickly from San Francisco to New York in this world, even though it is apparently the future based on those spaceships. Yeah, if it was like 6 months, you would have figured that somebody in New York would have heard of what's going on out there in San Francisco and sent some sort of an Avenger maybe to go check it out.
Well, but they're not here. Sony doesn't have the rights to those.
They would pick and choose the Spider Avenger to send.
But they don't want to damage their relationship with Disney, which is damaged now, so it'll be interesting to see what they do after this. Maybe
Sony specifically, you mean? Sony's running the next one, right?
Yeah, because they had a falling out in the last couple weeks where I don't think that Kevin decided not to work on Spider-Man stuff because he was very integral in wanting to do the Spider-Man things, but I feel like the powers that be wanted to try to get better terms out of the amount of effort that Kevin was putting in on Spider-Man stuff. So what you wound up with was a situation where Sony said, nah, we can do this. And we'll see, because they feel pretty confident. I think that they made so much money off of Venom. It was one of the highest grossing movies of 2018, surprisingly enough. But yeah,
I am very surprised.
Yeah, it's shocking, really.
You're going to get a large number of people just showing up to see Tom Hardy hop in a lobster tank, fully clothed, and start chewing on a thing. But it's not really like Marvel money.
No, but it was enough. It was a lot of money for them. Because if you do the math on, like, if you do like a 50-50 split or something like that, then it doesn't make any financial sense for Sony to agree to those terms, because they'd be making less money than they would be making even if they made another Venom. So there you have it. Anyway, we'll see if now all of a sudden, You have Spider-Man appear or is mentioned at all in the context of this, but it'll be weird because it won't be in context of a prior relationship that had to do with the origin story. It'll just be like some, hey, we bumped into each other now at some later stage. Which
maybe
be
he's
different.
Taking another school trip. His school seems to go on a lot of trips.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But anywho, this movie is weird for a lot of those reasons, because it causes some weird formatting issues, and it pulls from various bits of source material spread out over several other things and mashes them all together in terms of trying to make like a story. And what you wind up with is Venom has to fight something that's bad, which turns out to be Riot, because he's trying to prevent the other symbiotes from coming, which is based on a thing that happened. But Riot is actually, in the comics, one of the offsprings of Venom, that the Life Foundation induces the Venom symbiote to have little asexual, like, baby things. And there's, like, 5 or 6 of them. And they, you know, he fights them at several points. Instead, what happens is those things are contemporaneous with him. At least Riot is. We don't get names for the other ones that died. You get him trying to fight that. And then at the end of the movie, they very unsubtly set up Woody Harrelson as Cletus, the host of Carnage.
Slash rodeo clown. They didn't need to do that with the hair, is all I'm saying.
Oh, no, it's so silly. That's how you define Venom, I guess, in a vacuum, is like it's him versus the other symbiotes. And
it's pretty weird, though, because this movie has 4 or 5 bad guys and like half a good guy, something like that.
Yeah, because he's an anti-hero.
Eddie Brock is an anti-hero by himself. And then Venom is basically just kind of, I don't know, it's like chaotic. Neutral. I don't know anything about that stuff. So I'm just gonna say he's just chaos and a little bit of violence. And then Riot's a bad guy. And then what's Riz's character's name? He's a bad guy.
Yeah, Charlton Drake.
Carlton Drake.
Carlton Drake, yeah.
Worst name.
What a terrible name. The name's lifted from the comics but from a different thing. Anyway, so we should just address this right up front. He is a terrible bad guy. I like Riz Ahmed. Well,
talking about Riz?
We're talking about Riz. Yeah. I mean, all of the bad guys in this movie are bad, but Riz Ahmed is basically like written to be like a Saturday morning cartoon villain. It's not great writing for him. He doesn't really have anything that motivates his bizarre, you know, mustache twirling, tie a damsel to the railroad.
Oh no, he's got motivation,
kind of,
but it's the worst. It's because humans are destroying the planet, and in a generation we're going to need somewhere else to live. So he's just exploring planets for potential matches for where we can go when the Earth is uninhabitable by apparently sending a spaceship up into space to just like drive around and go like, hey, that looks nice over there.
Yeah, except I don't buy that. I don't buy any of that. He just kind of does things. He's just like, yes, you know, humans are bad. I'm going to kill them for the purposes of saving them. It doesn't make
it's
any
like
logical
the human
sense.
Human race is exhibiting such hubris against the Earth, and then proceeds to exhibit an even larger amount of hubris towards everything around him, and then becomes a monster.
Yeah, well, see, I get what they were trying to go for, which is they wanted to have Elon Musk, basically. And they wanted to have a Silicon Valley, robber baron who has the power and influence to do whatever he wants without answering to anyone.
You can tell he's from Silicon Valley, too, because he dresses weird. He wears a suit jacket over top of, like, a wetsuit.
Yes, and sneakers. But it's... That's what I mean, though, is like you don't buy like Riz Ahmed in this role as this character because it doesn't seem like there's any real explanation for this stuff. It's like, why would someone behave in this manner where it's like, yes, we're moving on to human trials just start murdering people.
Even the basic parts about his character don't make any sense, where he like specifically requested to talk to Eddie Brock about his spaceships to try to put everyone at ease. It's like, first of all, Elon Musk doesn't want to talk to any reporters. He just wants to spend his billions of dollars and do whatever he wants without like people screwing with him. Like his ego is not inflated by talking to reporters. He'll just go tweet something if he wants to, like, put a message out there.
No, but Elon Musk likes to talk to sycophants. So
sure.
He'll, you know.
Why would you pick somebody who is as controversial and challenging as the quote unquote interviewer that is Eddie Brock, who is.
Yeah.
I think the only person in this movie who is less believable than Riz Ahmed as Elon Musk is Tom Hardy as anybody who does any sort of journalism.
Everything about Tom Hardy's character is completely unbelievable, because you start with him waking up in the morning in Michelle Williams' bedroom. And you're just like,
with
how
gel
did this...
in his hair and makeup on his face and three bracelets and a necklace on.
Sounds like a country song, I guess, but it's just like, but how did that happen? Like, there's I'd be more interested, instead of the origin story of Venom, I'd be more interested in knowing the origin story of how in the world these two people possibly found each other romantically interesting, because not just on the surface they don't seem to have things in common, but just like a deeper than the surface they don't seem to have anything in common. And
I'm mostly wondering how they afford that house.
Well, she affords that house because she's a lawyer.
Still, she could be a really good lawyer, but it's San Francisco.
Yeah, well, maybe she bought it 10 years ago.
It looked like a $2, $3 million thing they had
going on.
Maybe
they rent. I don't know, Dan.
These are the logistics I want information about. How often does Eddie Brock buy San Francisco branded t-shirts? Because they all seem very new and not at all realistic.
Man, San Francisco stuff is kind of like a drag too. It doesn't really seem to make any sense. Like, they have that base that's built into the side of the mountain thing there, and
the Photoshop graphics. Yeah. Yeah, we're just gonna put a building over here. It'll be fine. Don't worry about it.
I mean, they do that for Starfleet Academy in like the far future, so I assume zoning laws change at some point. His company and rocket ship thing, that's what turns into Starfleet eventually. But
after it's abandoned.
Yeah.
No, it worked for Iron Man again too. They just like photoshopped a big mansion on top of a little rock outcropping in Malibu, and they're like, boom, Iron Man lives here. So why not just do that for a space pad?
I don't buy that. I mean, and it also makes the world of the movie seem very small, because San Francisco's not huge, but at the same time, it's like, you know, when you're dealing with like rocket ship launches and all this other stuff, it's like, why is it less than a 5-minute walk from their control room to a rocket launch pad? Like,
that's one of the best parts, where he's like, start the launch, it hits a 5-minute timer, and he's like, cool, I got to get in there now.
Like, yeah, and then they proceed to take like 30 minutes to get into the 5-minute rocket.
He knew he was going to transform, and then he was going to hop real fast.
Yes, and then a fight ensues, and then time stops.
Just a hop, skip, and a jump from your control room, which conveniently has a frequency generator patched into the speaker system for no reason.
I mean, there was a reason. That's the script dictated that there be one there. But, Riz Ahmed, don't buy. Tom Hardy, don't buy. And the initial introduction of him as someone who is in a romantic relationship with Michelle Williams' character, don't buy at all. And then you have...
I like to imagine that you're like, what's his name, that Kramer guy with the show, telling people to invest or not to invest.
What did I do to deserve this insult? But,
You told everybody not to buy.
I said, I don't buy. This is personal financial advice for my believability. Then after that, they go into the montage of his journalism as a cable news reporter of some kind, some local cable news journalist in San Francisco. It's very poorly defined, because he seems to work for something that's akin to CNN, sort of, in some ways. But at the same time, it's very specifically just about San Francisco and about local investigative journalism stories about San Francisco, not
Rubin
large
eruption,
mm-hmm. but like very small scale stuff. It, like all the yeah. stuff that he talks about is like, so just like that thing, that one little mm-hmm. thing. Yeah, that's what you do for this enormous company. All right, I guess.
And because of that, he got a staff job. He's not freelance. He has a staff job.
Doesn't make any sense. And he doesn't need to like wear real clothes to be filmed on camera.
You can tell yeah. He's an indie investigative journalist because he holds one of those little flippy notepads that he occasionally points at.
See, what they should have had him do is be a vlogger. And
filming himself with the selfie cam the whole time.
Yeah, and then uploading his stuff to YouTube, and then because of the popularity of his vlog, he's interviewed by Elon Musk of this movie because he's seeking technology sycophants, and then he's surprised by the line of questioning. Rather than pretending for 1 minute that Eddie Brock is a journalist of some kind of reputable level where he can be filmed on television for either a local or a national audience.
He has smarts and integrity. Well, street smarts, to be clear.
Well, it's one of the things I don't understand is the boss at one point says, you're a smart guy, Eddie. And it's just like, I've seen nothing to demonstrate that he is a smart man at all in the course of this film before or after that statement. But so Eddie's also like a truth to power, I'm going to, expose all the stuff. I'm Sinclair. You remember that? The jungle, all the meatpacking things. Anyway, whatever. He's
Upton Sinclair. Yeah, sure. Yes. Totally.
He's like, yeah, that's me. But like more hardcore and emo. But it's not. And he's bad at it. And
if Upton Sinclair had a leather jacket.
But it's so ridiculous too, because he gets the chance to interview Riz Ahmed's character, and the interview process is basically like, yeah, I'm gonna talk to you about your rocket. Yeah, I'm from New York. And then he pivots deftly into, so you made all your money off of bodies, off of pharmaceuticals and stuff. They like people died, I heard, just read it somewhere. And then it's just like, no, you can't do that. You can't just like spring that on somebody in your interview. You're not going to get anywhere with that. Like there's no subtlety
that's
or strategy or anything.
They tell you if you're not getting what you want out of the person you're interviewing, just accuse them of things until they admit to something.
Yeah, it's just absurd. It's really absurd. It's like he's a student journalist. But that is Eddie, and because of his immaturity and his BS, he gets quickly fired, and everybody figures out that he got his information via his girlfriend, his fiance, who is Michelle Williams, who is working for a firm that is representing Carlton Drake. And so she gets fired, and then
conveniently,
he just
wanted some orange juice in the middle of the night, and he saw a little growl notification on her MacBook that said something about confidential legal documents.
And then he knew her password and opened it up, and used the mail application to open up a PDF that said confidential. But
didn't even have to type the password in. Like, who are these people not encrypting their confidential PDFs? Like, come on, guys.
Yeah, I don't know. But maybe it was her like 6-character password that was the linchpin. That was their whole security system. But the thing's just silly because she gets fired. She gets mad at him, rightfully so, of course, because he's a dum-dum.
He meets her at her office as she's walking out the front door with a single banker's box that she sets down, and then berates him, and then hands him a very large diamond ring and says, "We're not getting married anymore."
Well, she drops it on the ground. She dropped the box on the ground.
Oh, the box. Yeah, and then she sticks the ring in his shirt pocket.
Yeah, and then says, "I loved in past tense," and he's like, "Wait. That's the past tense. I went to journalism school. I know that's the past tense." He's such a smart guy. Anyway, his relationship's ruined, and he ruined it. And this is where you get your 6 months later thing. And apparently in the 6 months, it took a billion years for this one symbiote that got onto the ambulance lady and then like got into the old lady to go from Malaysia to Hong Kong. And then,
yeah, she literally basically walks from Malaysia to San Francisco, which is why it takes 6 months. And then, you know, it gives Riz time to do his rabbit trials.
Mm.
And then one rabbit trial works, and then they immediately go to human trials.
Yeah. No, it's because he's a Silicon Valley Elon Musk guy who is pushing against the limits of what science would consider ethical. But whatever. This isn't like The Boring Company or something where it's just like, I made a tube under the ground. It's like, yeah, we're just going to start abducting people, getting them to agree to be volunteers and then, you know, killing them. But
I guess it's more Uber than Elon Musk, if anything.
I suppose.
Taking advantage of people without them really knowing what they're getting themselves into.
Mm. Driving people to their death. But
sign here and go pick up the symbiote.
You know, we flash forward 6 months. Eddie is a drunk who is unemployed.
And you can tell this because he looks exactly the same as he does from the beginning of the movie.
Yeah, he just sounds groggier, I guess. But not that much groggier. He basically sounds the same as when he woke up in Michelle Williams' bed. But he's in a bar, and there's a very bad monitor comp of Riz Ahmed's character talking about the Life Foundation and the yay they're doing stuff. And, he's like, hey, turn that off. And then the other guy's like, hey, some of us like science. And then he's like, I'm going to go chase myself around the apartment, play hard to get. And then he walks out of there and he goes to the convenience store. And then he has a surly thing with the convenience store lady. And then this sets up a whole thing of like, he recognizes that there's something bad happening and he hides behind the thing because the guy gets, there's a guy who comes in and gets protection money. And then he's like, I'm going to get my Pepto-Bismol and my little plastic triangle box sandwich thing. The lady says...
Could the mugger protection money guy be any more of a cartoon than anyone else in this movie somehow?
No, and all of his dialogue is ADR, which is fascinating. I wonder if they're like, oh no, this is too subtle. No, nobody can figure out what this guy's doing. Why he's here.
They're like, yeah, grab that Jack Daniels bottle upside down to show that you're an unconventional badass.
Oh, man. Eddie's all like, meh, blah. And so Jenny Slate is the scientist lady who's conducting a lot of these experiments for Riz Ahmed's character. And she witnesses a human trial that goes awry, where the guy dies. And the symbiote crawls out of him, flings itself on the glass, and then Riz Ahmed's just like, okay, next. And
really, she comes from a future where if your employer is doing something bad or asks you to do something bad, rather than quit, you're just supposed to go along with it?
Well, he
but
does
feel bad.
He does threaten her family at one point, vaguely. So she wants to go to the investigative reporter who failed a simple line of questioning of her boss and trust him with busting this case wide open, which seems bad on a lot of levels for her and anyone she cares about, and it is. But she goes to the convenience store, and at first you see him talking to himself, and then it pans over and reveals that she's very bad at following him, and they have their conversation. And she relays to him that she can't go to the police because she's worried about her family, and he doesn't understand the power that Carlton Drake has, and he pushes her away and says, you know, I'm not interested in, you know, journalism and stuff. And then he goes off to find Anne. He's like, I'm just walking past the place. So I was just here. And then Anne's like, yeah, well, I just got out of my lift with my much more appropriate doctor boyfriend. And
boyfriend that I live with now after 6 months.
Yes, who has a key to the apartment. And Dr. Boyfriend is a big fan of Eddie Brock's work, which I actually kind of liked. I thought that he was written to be sort of amusing, where it disarmed mm-hmm. Eddie. Like, it would have been kind of boring had he been, like, having... If there had been, like, an adversarial relationship and some weird love triangle thing. And it's like, no. He's just, like... He's just a goober. He's a dork.
He's a normal character that has a little bit of humor to him. Not, like, whatever Tom Hardy's trying to do. He's like, yeah, that was pretty funny and cool the way he brought those people down.
Yeah,
right? No?
Yeah, he says, like, oh yeah, he brought down a lot of people, and she's like, yeah, one of them was me, and I was like, oh, this is the comedy part of the movie. I like this, because I like, you know, in spite of everything that's happening, Michelle Williams is, you know, still interesting. She's not written to be like a complete idiot. She just seems totally incompatible with Tom Hardy, so it does make you think she's at least a partial idiot.
She looks like she goes to Catholic high school, which I'm not sure why.
Yeah, it's a choice. But they have the thing where he's like, yeah, I'm going to go let myself in. And then he's like, oh, you got a McKee? And like, I'm going to go say hi to Mr. Belvedere. And he's like, really? You know, the cat doesn't like you. And he's just like, oh, the cat doesn't like anybody because it's a cat. And, you know, he's not wrong. But they have their little confrontation. And she's like, you know, Eddie, no. This is not happening. Not getting back with you. Like, it's all in you, and you don't understand that it's your fault. And then he goes to the Golden Gate Bridge, as one does, and stares off into the distance of the blue screen. And he makes up his mind that he's going to take out the card that he was given by Jenny Slate's character, which is tattered for some weird reason. But he takes it out and all the edges are bent up and tattered. But he's like, yep, now's the time to call. And he arranges to go in there with her. She gets him into the building, but then the security guard's coming by, so she has him go into the office and she says, don't touch anything. And of course, he immediately touches all the stuff. And one of the things that
she's never heard of him before or seen anything that he's done to realize that he's just a giant child.
Yeah, he can't be trusted. He has no impulse control. So why not just put him in a big science lab full of deadly things? But he wanders...
was fine until he saw that one of his close friends who lives on the streets and sells newspapers was ill inside some sort of containment room. So his initial instinct is to smash the glass without asking any questions.
Yeah, and... She had told, Jenny Slate had told him that there are human trials being conducted, which have resulted in death. Some people are in these containment cells. So logically, one would assume there's something being contained inside these containment cells that causes death. But whatever, he breaks it. And so the possessed Maria comes out and strangles him. And then the creature leaves Maria. She falls over. And then, Eddie gets up and he's like, oh no. Doesn't like check her pulse or anything. Just runs out of the room.
It's like, that was weird. I should get out of here now.
Yeah, he's like, I was very concerned about Maria and trying to save her life. She may or may not be alive. I'm going to run. So he leaves, and then he's being chased by all the haphazard, terrible rent-a-cop security that Riz Ahmed's character has hired. And he starts to notice weird stuff like running up a tree. They escape. And he goes back to his apartment and he tries to have a beer and he spits it out and then he has a bunch of water. Then he's hungry. And so he eats frozen tater tots. And then he picks up a chicken carcass out of the trash.
Don't forget there's voices and stuff. And he's trying to have a phone call. He's very, I mean, he does a good job of like pretending to lose his mind, but he just kind of stays that way. I think the scene hereafter, where the bad guys bust in, that's next, right?
Yeah. Well, no, that's not next. There's the lobster scene, and then it's not until Jenny Slate's character gets captured that there's the scene where they break into the apartment. But we can skip forward a little.
Well, I was just gonna say the part where he's kind of loony in his apartment, and he fights back. I found that amusing the first time I saw it, where he puts his arms up and the Venom's like saying, what are you doing? You're embarrassing us. And he's like, it's a perfectly sensible thing to do. What are you talking about? And he's like, no, put it down. And he's arguing with himself and then beating him up and kind of apologizing at the same time. I thought he did a good job of like kind of losing his mind and also trying to still be in the moment in that scene in particular. But the rest of it I found mostly humorless, I guess. Except for Dr. Boyfriend. He's pretty good.
I mean, you know, it comes and goes. But that's much later. And what happens here is he realizes that something's wrong. He can't get a hold of Jenny. He decides that he's going to go talk to Anne, and he embarrasses her at the restaurant. And he's freaking out, and he like tries to eat some of the other patrons' food, and then he says, "That's dead." You know that, right? Like, you can't eat that's dead. Which is funny because we eat things that are dead because we don't typically eat live animals. But he is an alien. And so Anne and Dr. Boyfriend are, you know, rightfully panicked. And then Tom Hardy climbs into a lobster tank and then picks up a lobster and eats it by biting the shell.
Yeah. Yeah. Did that land for you?
I think it was oversold for me, to be perfectly honest with you. I had heard like, oh, there's a lobster tank scene. And I was like, okay. When I finally saw it, I was just like, that was it. He just, he climbed into that and then he picked up
he
a lobster.
He sits down fairly gingerly too. Like they're like, and now the lobster tank scene.
Well, he's like, ah. He sat in it gingerly because, they went into that location a day before this, and he's like, I'm going to climb in the lobster tank. And being the method brilliant actor that he is, he told everyone he's going to do that, and all the prep people were like, well, that's a bad idea. And so they tried to reinforce it so that when he got in, it wouldn't break, and they filled it with prop lobsters.
Propsters.
Well, I was going to do like a riff on Rock Lobster, but with prop lobster.
Oh, you want to hum a few bars, sing it? Go ahead.
You know, that whole thing.
Prop lobster.
God.
sorry, audience. That was the sound of my forehead hitting the microphone.
But then he wakes up and he's inside the MRI, and Dr. Boyfriend is there and Anna's not. And Dr. Boyfriend's like, don't worry about it. I'm a doctor who apparently does MRIs, which is totally a thing that doctors do. They sit right there while that's happening. So he does the MRI with the technician, and the sound of the MRI machine causes the symbiote to freak out, and they shut it off prematurely, but they get some stuff back, and the technician sees something on the screen. Tom Hardy gets out of there.
Also not how MRIs work, by the way.
No, I mean, none of this is how any of this works, but Tom Hardy gets out of there, and he's, you know, all flustered about it, and then we're introduced to the old lady who has a dog, and the dog is important only because there's a dog that is used to host later in this movie. Presumably the dog dies, but we don't necessarily know that, I guess.
You know, I just realized something. In the MRI, and then when he's kind of freaking out a little bit, he's doing a little bit of a Jerry Lewis thing, isn't he? Mm. He's a little bit of a flustered Jerry Lewis.
Yeah, I mean...
But not very good.
No, because it's Tom Hardy. How should I put this? Tom Hardy is not as good as he is famous.
The difficulty also is that he's doing an American accent and then trying to do Jerry Lewis on top of that.
Not, I think you're, American accent. No,
well, he's trying.
He's doing. I'm from, I don't know, the Bronx, Brooklyn. Something's happening what's happening with that
he's,
accent.
He's from Tom Hardy land. He's got like a Tim Curry thing going on where he's not from anywhere in particular. He's from Tom Hardy land.
Yeah, well, he definitely has like a whole like, I was, you know, kicked out of New York and because of the incident from my journalism, whatever. And so he's bad at this. He talks to the symbiote and he tries to like get some rest in his apartment. But the rock guy is playing rock music across the hall, and so he goes and tells him to knock it off, and then we get a glimpse of the little venomized things. Jenny Slate gets captured by Trace, Priest, whatever, I don't know, the lackey, the bad lackey.
The bad lackey, yeah, what was his name?
I don't know, it doesn't really matter.
Security Chief Roland Treese.
Yes, Treese. That's it. What a wonderful name.
Treece.
Yes, so bad. Did Topher Grace name him? Is that, is it just like a combination of Topher and Grace and they're just like trees? but they,
every generation you condense the name every, a little bit more.
Eventually it's going to be T. But the,
be the artist formerly known as Topher for a little while.
They break into his apartment. Well, not break in necessarily, but they knock first. And you hear the symbiote say, don't open that. And then he opens it anyway. And then there's security guys and they tase him. And, you know, this is where you get the arms up, arms down. You're making us look bad thing that you loved. And then he beats them all up and then leaves his apartment. And they chase him through the streets with exploding drones.
God. I have nothing to add. It's a motorcycle chase through CG San Francisco, green screen San Francisco. Venom does things with the motorcycle, with pushing cars out of the way. They jump some things sometimes. He grabs some railings and hops over. He fixes Tom Hardy's leg when he gets hit by a car. I took a nap, and then I woke up, and it was still happening. And then eventually, the bad guy, Trees guy, hits him with the car, and he's like, aha, I got you now. And then Venom heals him. He's like, no, you don't. I'm going to eat you. And then another guy shoots Venom's back, and he's like, all right, I'll eat you instead.
Yeah. It's not... This is one of those things where I think they tried to make... I'm assuming, at least, that... They tried to juice this action scene up a little, but it can't handle it because these are just rent-a-cops and their drone army of exploding drones.
Between the exploding drones and the automatic weapons, and again, being that San Francisco is a relatively small city, all things considered, and a lot of hills, you figure like half of the city would just like look over their shoulder and just see what's happening and be like, oh, that seems unpleasant and bad. Maybe we should go investigate. But no.
But after this action-packed scene, the Venom sort of has some tendrils come out and form a little face that talks to Brock. And he's like, you know, I'm Venom and you are mine and blah, blah, blah. We're going to, you know, go find Drake's rocket and bring back more of my kind, etc. And you got to do this. Go along with the plan, and you might survive. And Eddie's like, well, I have evidence I need to drop off at the newspaper first, and cable channel first. And Venom's like, okay, sure, let's do that. And so they go to his former employer, and he has a run-in with a security guy, and Venom wants to eat his face, or brains, or something. And he says, no, you can't do that. He's nice. And so then they decide to ascend the building, and Eddie Brock has a fear of heights, and then they get inside, and once they do that, Eddie leaves his phone, which is weird, and then he's going to go back down, and Venom says, jump, and then Eddie's just, they show him at the elevator, and Venom calls him a name. And then they go down to the lobby, and there's a SWAT team, and then Venom, like, eats a SWAT team, which is not really remarked upon later.
Venom eats a SWAT team?
Well, I mean, he doesn't eat the whole SWAT team, but there's violence inflicted upon these SWAT team members that seems not good, necessarily, but they escape the situation. There's another MRI scene, because he goes to Anne, and Anne takes him to Dr. Boyfriend again, and they do the MRI, and the thing gets off of him and is trapped in the room for like 2 seconds before they realize it wasn't a hermetically sealed room.
Close the glass door. Right.
Yeah. And so it gets out of there, and it takes over the little yippy barking dog from earlier. Eddie, meanwhile, because he doesn't have the thingy on him, gets captured by the security guys, the rent-a-cops, and they haul him away. The little doggy witnesses this, and the little doggy goes up to Anne, who's concerned and wants to get Eddie Brock back, and the symbiote uses that to its benefit. So cut to Riz Ahmed, who sees a little girl in his office, and he's like, "Oh, what are you doing here, little girl? Looks like a zombie." And
she just walks in. Like, he's like, "Oh, how suspicious that nobody's answering when I say hello down the hall." And then small girl, and he's like, "Are you lost?" It's like, "Well, it's the middle of the night. Probably not."
No. This whole scene could be written a lot better, but she takes over him, sort of, except it's more of an Eddie Brock situation where there seems to be a relationship, a bond formed, rather than just zombifying, as the previous hosts were zombified. Presumably the little girl died, which is something you can think about all night, which is great. But they have resumed.
Maybe he ate her, so there wasn't any like leftovers that are weird.
Yeah, but I would say it's still dead. Yeah, so he's infected with the thingy, and so then he talks to Eddie Brock when they bring him in, and they strap him to a chair, and he's like, "Yeah, Eddie, where's the thingy?" And Eddie's like, "You know, I don't know where it is." And then Riz Ahmed turns into the riot symbiote, and he's like, "That's the ugliest thing I ever seen. You got one of those things up your butt."
I love his bad accent when he's like, "Up your butt." So, I had a symbiote on my butts, and now you do too.
Yeah, he's a weird like husky smoker whiskey voice thing that makes it very difficult to understand him sometimes. And he doesn't even have like a face mask on as he did in certain other movies. He's
also got like a wobbly like nervous voice too, which somehow just adds to the whole thing.
Yeah, the Jerry Lewis thing. It's.
A symbiote up my butt. That's a song from the day the clown died. it's not what it's called. I forget what it's called.
What if the symbiotes? What if Flubber was a symbiote? So they have Riz Ahmed have him right where he wants him. He's in a chair. He can kill him right there. He's got super symbiote powers and no accountability to anyone. But he walks out of the room and he says, incompetent people, go take him to the forest.
Right, exactly. We need to kill him. We've got all these people dying around us in these glass rooms here, but we have to shoot him. So take him to the forest behind our San Francisco Bay office and shoot him.
That's I would just like to say there is no forest on that specific piece of geography where the office is, and you see that in the wide shots. They have the weird forest stuff, and the one security guard and Treese or whatever, they're there, and they're like, "Yeah, we've walked you out for like 10 yards from 5 miles from 6 kilometers. I don't know, whatever." Like, he's out there in the middle of nowhere, and then one of the guys gets plucked off while Treese is talking to Brock, and then Brock's like, "Yeah, Kama," and then Treese gets picked off by having his head eaten by what is in the comics referred to as she venom, but that seems really sexist, so I'll just say venom.
By luck of luck, it turns out that Michelle Williams is also capable of symbioting with venom.
Yeah, or at least symbioting long enough for this specific instance to occur. Who knows what her long-term viability is, but anyway, Venom meets a head, then there's a kissing thing that happens, which is kind of perverse and weird in an 80s body horror kind of a way.
Venom doesn't really have lips; he just has teeth.
Yeah, I mean,
a lot of big teeth.
At least they didn't French. I think that would have been difficult for Eddie.
It's a very long tongue too. That would be kind of.
Yeah, a bit choked. They smooch sort of ish, and then the symbiote transitions off of Anne and into Eddie, but then they're both people and they have their moment. And then Anne goes, oh God, did I bite that guy's head off? And he's like, yeah, I know, it's kind of weird. And then it's like, yeah, that Venom reconnecting with Eddie telepathically knows a couple other things. And so he's like, that symbiote was riot and we need to go stop him right now before he does the thing. And it's too dangerous for Anne. And so then he turns it to Venom and runs off and then turns back into Eddie. And Eddie's like, oh, I want to, you know, Anne can do stuff. And then he's like, no, it's too dangerous. And they go to the launch pad thing. And Riz Ahmed is like, I'm in a control room. I control. And, start the countdown now. I don't need a co-pilot.
I'm rich. If I say something with a very firm voice, that means do it, up to and including launching a spaceship.
This is preposterous. But anywho, they do it. And then there's the one guy who's like, no, this has gone too far. I'm going to look up the abort procedure in the three-ring binder that we keep back here. He couldn't wait like 2 minutes, but whatever. So he gets impaled. And then Riz Ahmed turns into Riot in the middle of the control room. Everybody runs and they're scared. And then Riot kills a lot of people.
Smashing things.
And then Riot runs to the rocket. And Venom intercedes. And then and Venom says, you know, he's got bleep you wouldn't believe. And they fight. And then there's a spiky ball thing. And then Eddie's like, oh, crud. And Venom's like, yeah, see, I told you. And then they have a prolonged CG mandatory superhero fight scene that occurs.
Mm-hmm. And there's noises, and they like mix together, and they become one thing, and they split apart again, and then they both lose their symbiotes, then they both recover their symbiotes just in the nick of time, and, you know, they fight. And then Riot's like, ah, I killed you, and you don't have your symbiote, but then he gets in the spaceship and Tom Hardy gets saved by Venom. And then he hops up there and kills, he destroys the spaceship. Well, he just cuts open the gas tank with the same blade thing that Riot left stabbed in him. So then it blows up because their only weakness is high frequency audio and fire, which, you know, it's a lot of things weakness like ours and plants and whatever.
Yeah, it feels pretty generic.
It feels pretty generic, yeah. Riot and Riz, like, they didn't need to call that out. Like, Riot and Riz melt in this weird sort of, like, bubbly thing. And then Venom, like, saves Tom Hardy as he's falling.
He misses Incredibles him.
turns into a parachute.
Yeah.
To cushion his fall into the bay.
It's kind of, I did kind of laugh when he turns into a parachute because just it's, you know, it's the Incredibles is the first thing that just sprung to mind, but anyway, he saves Eddie, and Eddie falls in the water and then doesn't drown because he wakes up, I guess. And then you're like, oh no, but Venom sacrificed himself. And then it's like, well, I know they want to make a sequel, so no, he didn't. But let's let that suspense hang in there for all of a minute and 30 seconds, because then we have Anne and Eddie talking on a stoop, and Anne's like, that was weird, right? Doing that stuff and being those things. And then Eddie's like, yeah, that was weird. And then they chit-chat, and then Venom's like, she doesn't know that we're going to get her back. And then he's like, no, we're not. And then Anne's like, Eddie, are you talking to someone? This is suspicious and seems almost like Venom didn't actually die. But that doesn't happen. Instead, he leaves, and then he runs into Stan Lee in one of his last cameos. And Stan Lee's like, don't give up on her, the both of you, which is a knowing, weird thing. And then Tom Hardy wanders off, and then he has a list of demands that he makes of Venom as a symbiote if he's going to hang around, that he can't do certain things, can't just, like, indiscriminately kill people, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, only the really bad people. And then they go to the convenience store and they're going to pick up tater tots. And
chocolate. Don't forget chocolate.
And chocolate. And then, the protection guy from the protection racket guy from earlier, comes in. And so Eddie turns into Venom and threatens the guy. And he says, you know, like, I'll eat your arms and your legs and stuff. And then you'll be like a turd rolling in the wind. And he's like, I changed my mind, I'm just gonna eat you now. And so he eats the protection racket guy, and then turns back into Eddie, and Eddie just turns to the lady and just says, "Ah, I'm sorry, I got a parasite," and then he leaves, and that's the end.
Which is a bold choice, because the whole I got a parasite thing, and then the walking down the street going, "The way I see it, we can do whatever we want." That was like the opening of the trailer, so good job deflating the end of the movie, sort of.
I mean, I didn't remember the trailer by the time I was watching this 3 glasses of red wine deep on a flight, but
I bet it was
sure.
Really good wine too.
Yeah. But the you know, that's their thing, that's the end. And then they have the Eminem song, and then there's a mid credit scene. But man, just want to emphasize Eminem. Why?
He just says Venom a bunch in a really weird accent. He's doing a Tom Hardy impression.
Ugh, terrible.
Not really. Just nonsense.
Marshall P. Mathers. Then we cut to a end credit sequence where Tom Hardy is going on that interview that he talked to Anne about earlier. And that interview is that he's going to talk to one of the wacky serial killers that's inside of...
He's in interviewer mode, because you can tell, because he's got his exact same outfit on. He's just holding his little flip notebook.
Yeah, and then it's like, yeah, I saw Silence of the Lambs and a bunch of other movies. And so he's going to go in there, and Woody Harrelson's like, "What's up, Clarice?" And then they have him, you know, drawing with blood like normal people do. I don't know. This whole thing was over the top and unnecessary, and I felt like it was a weird teaser that they could have just not done. But whatever, we'll find out when the sequel happens.
The post-credit scene is to let you know that while you only saw Venom this entire movie, other symbiotes might also exist.
But they did that.
Yeah, they did that immediately. There are 4 of them. Anyway, Woody Harrelson has red hair.
I mean,
it's long and curly. He borrowed a wig from the Annie art department.
Tomorrow, I'll have a symbiote tomorrow. It's only a carnage away. But it's so bad. But and it's obviously just to appeal to the hardcore fans who are going to be like, "Oh man, did you see Carnage? Let's go get some Slim Jims." It's not good. It's not good for the film. They could have just not had that at all, really. But apparently Ruben Fleischer was able to get Woody Harrelson to do this for him because of their prior working relationship from Zombieland. So there's that. And then Ruben Fleischer, either as a result of the process of making this movie or just by pure coincidence, was unavailable to work on the sequel to Venom. And that went to Andy Serkis. So we'll find out what happens with that.
Yeah, what's Ruben up to these days?
As far as I know, just Zombieland 2.
Hmm.
But yeah, this is one of those situations where there were development problems that were spoken about at several points during the production process, because you had several people who had opinions, who had power to make opinions happen, and so that would often butt up against the other people who had power to make opinions happen.
Well, it's one thing we know, it's that when Sony's involved, things are always going to go very well.
No. Oh, wait, that was sarcasm. All right, so anyway, we had the Dream Team production trio of Amy Pascal, Eva Arad, and Matt Tolmach, who were the producers on Amazing Spider-Man and Amazing Spider-Man 2, Avi and Amy Pascal had gone back way back since the first Spider-Man. They've done all the Spider-Man things. One thing that they keep trying to make happen is Venom, and all of the other enemies as like a spin-off universe, which is weird because it's very hard to make people buy into that sort of a thing, because you need like heroes for them to butt up against, or you need them to be heroes themselves to fight against other villains, but it's not really how any of this is structured. So weird. And I think this is also a situation where the differing opinions of perhaps a star who has sway.
Tom Cruise.
Yes. Tom Cruise was very vocal about how he wanted the Venom movie to happen. Wouldn't that be funny? But
it was weird that he called us up out of the blue and had some very strong opinions. But, well, you know, what are you going to do? He's a very high-powered producer these days.
Yeah, much in the same way that Tim Miller and Ryan Reynolds butted heads on the first Deadpool over tone issues and things. Tom Hardy had the power to exercise certain opinions, like how he was going to pre-record his lines as Venom and play them back to himself through an earpiece, which is a clever technique that he picked up when he was working on a different movie.
Incredibly clever.
Yeah.
Works really well. Always has.
So he had the power to dictate things like, I'm going to climb into a lobster tank. Then everyone would scramble to make it so that he could climb into a lobster tank.
You know, to be honest, I feel that a little bit. In my job, like, sometimes I have the power to, like, tell people that I'm going to climb into a lobster tank. And then I'm, like, halfway into that lobster tank, and I'm like, oh, I really feel like a dick right now because I'm getting in this lobster tank, and everyone here has got to support me climbing into this lobster tank. And I'm just like, I'm real sorry, guys. For doing that. I imagine Tom Hardy doesn't have a lot of the same reservations.
No.
You know, self-confidence issues that I do when I'm halfway into a lobster tank in public, but, you know.
Happens. No. Tom Hardy strikes me as an all the way into a lobster tank kind of a person. And whether or not it was the right thing to do, not admitting anything about it. But he was also apparently heavily involved with the reshoots, directing some of the reshoots, supposedly, in a way that did not violate Directors Guild, blah, 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 according to Wikipedia, which is interesting.
I forget it's something just like it's about a percentage of the overall film and or, like, not taking credit and stuff.
Yeah. It's just so weird. Could you imagine just Tom Hardy just being like, yeah, I'm going to do the reshoots? It's just like, what? Wait, what? No. Anyway, he got to do some of that stuff. And Ruben Fleischer was able to shape things the way he kind of wanted them to go in the edit and stuff. And then the producers got to say, none of that is happening. And they could do whatever they wanted, which is hilarious. Because only good things happen. Because the producers were so heavily involved in the way things were filmed that they have all of the raw material that they need to do what they want in the edit bay. And definitely aren't just going to mash a bunch of stuff together.
Yeah, when they say one for you, one for them, they don't usually mean one cut of the same movie for you, one cut of the same movie for the producers. They're usually talking about separate movies. But whatever, sometimes it happens. What are you going to do?
Well, I was just reading the Wikipedia page the other day for another Sony Pictures movie, Men in Black International.
Oh, I haven't seen that yet. Is it good?
No, I haven't seen it either. I was just reading the Wikipedia page because there was a VFX breakdown or something, and I was like, well, who did that thing? And so then I opened up the Wikipedia page and I was reading that, and then it was like, well, this doesn't make any sense because they're just talking about characters I don't know. And then I just read the Wikipedia page summary because I was like, the odds of me actually watching this movie are very low. So yeah. And then at the bottom there was the why did this happen part, and that was F. Gary Gray was the director, but was overruled on a lot of stuff by a producer who had final cut. And so he just cut together the movie how he wanted it, and F. Gary Gray cut together the movie how he wanted it, and the studio executives picked the other producer's cut over F. Gary Gray's cut. So that sounds like everything went really well on that, too. I don't know. I don't know why anybody would really agree to some of these terms and conditions other than they couldn't make a movie otherwise, but seems like maybe Ruben Fleischer can go do something else, hopefully, with his time and money, than waste it on this
guy. Yeah, he's a good filmmaker.
Which one?
F. Gary Gray. What did he recently do? Oh, Straight Outta Compton was good. Be Cool, right?
Yeah, I was gonna say. remember that one movie that I hated?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a bad movie.
Mm-hmm. If only we saw the other producer's cut. But the But anyway.
Venom.
Yeah, I mean, to be perfectly honest with you, on Letterboxd, where you can rate things in half star increments, out of 5 stars, I rated this 3.
Now, I don't know what that means in your scale of rating, but 3 stars for me means it was fine.
And that's kind of how I feel, to be perfectly honest with you.
Let me see what I rated it.
Because I'm grading this on a curve.
Oh, really?
Yeah. As hard as that might be to believe, based on the description of the events that transpired in the production of making this thing, I feel like it's necessary to grade this one on a curve. And so I'm like, well, does it kind of do what it was supposed to maybe kind of be doing? And I was like, half and half. So 3.
I wonder what my review was, but I gave it 1.5. where do I see what I wrote? Oh, Venom or Letterboxd.
You probably just wrote like meh or bad.
Sometimes I write things. Oh, wait, here it is.
You don't have like a lot of purple prose, let's put it that way.
I wrote the writing, it is V bad, period. That is all I wrote. 1.5. I think I was drinking when I watched it the first time, too, to be honest.
Well, you should try being on an airplane. But
I mean, I wasn't wrong, but...
I mean, the writing's bad, and a lot of these choices are bad. But for some reason, it's like, could have been worse, is how I feel about it, I guess.
I think a lot of the stuff that got to me the first time was Riz just, like, philosophizing out loud about what his character's motivation was, and Eddie being a completely transparent fake movie character. Just all of those things just like stick out like a sore thumb.
Yeah, if this movie had just been about Anne, it would have been way more interesting.
Or just like smashing more things,
I guess. But the smashing things were the parts that I liked the least.
Yeah, they would have had to weave some stuff into the smashing things if they did any more of it.
Yeah. One thing I thought was interesting is because this is made in a modern era, and it's the effects are done by DNEG, you got your interstellar-ish kind of spacecraft, which is kind of funny to me. But
you think they reused some assets, just kind of elongated a little bit?
No, I don't think they reused anything. But it just surprised me that it seemed inspired by, at the very least. By the filmmaker,
Paul Franklin was the supervisor on this. Is that in the Wikipedia article here somewhere?
Yes, he was.
There he is.
I'm not going to besmirch Mr. Franklin because he does good work elsewhere.
Yeah, but, no, he's good. He's good.
Yeah, there are some things that I didn't love, like the points where the symbiote and the actor would meet. Didn't love it. The lighting and shading and integration of those areas didn't seem spot on. It seemed like a lot of things would just sort of drop off to an inky blackness where you couldn't see a little bit exactly of the, what was happening.
Iron Man helmet problem too, where that stuff's all CG, where they just sort of like put like a frame around their face, which you can tell if you look at them. But
yeah, don't love it. But anyway, he's he's decent, and so they were like inspired by slime molds and stuff for how they did the simulations and things, and. It's one of those weird situations where it's strange to see other VFX studios doing Spider-Man things, but that's more the case than is not the case these days.
Does it feel like they're dating your ex?
I guess.
You're like, hey, I should be making Spider-Man things.
Yeah. Well, you know, it all stems from having separate profit and loss for different divisions of your company. So don't do that, kids, when you run your international conglomerate. Just make sure everybody gets along.
It's a good point. Let me write that down for my national conglomerate.
Yes. International conglomerate.
International. Sorry, let me write that down. International conglomerate.
Okay. It's INTER.
NAT.
Yeah.
Venom.
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 Venom. And I know that for a lot of people, they don't even like the character Venom, don't want to see a Venom movie at all. feel like there's nothing good that can ever come from this. And they're not entirely wrong, I guess, since we haven't really seen a good movie come out of it. But
it doesn't seem like a fully formed enough character to drive his own movie. But
no, but none of Spider-Man's villains really are, because like there's a guy who's made out of sand. There's another guy who's made out of water.
I mean, that's why the movies are mostly about Spider-Man, and then there's a villain there.
Yeah, and I mean, his strongest villains are elsewhere. But Venom is a fan favorite for people who were coming of age in the 90s and 2000s. And so it was very popular with them. And it was very unpopular with older Spider-Man fans who were of the you know, guy made out of sand from a science lab accident and guy made out of water from a science lab accident kind of variety of things. That they were more used to those situations and villains, and not so much the angsty anti-hero, teethy, bitey, killing stuff of the 90s.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Large, vaguely Spider-Man shaped alien.
Yeah.
I don't have an opinion.
Shocking. And on that note, swing away.
Yeah, it was just, yeah, something like that, but he doesn't really like have legs. He just uses arms.
Because he didn't possess Spider-Man, so he doesn't have Spider-Man stuff.
Oh, is that a... Oh, right, yeah, in the other movies.
Yeah, because he makes the Spider-Man webs, but they're black.
Right. Halloween-themed Spider-Man.
Hot Topic-themed Spider-Man.
Yes, exactly.
The end. Said knock knock, let the devil in. Alien, it Elliot, phone home. Ain't no telling when this chokehold on this game will end. I'm loco, became a symbiote.